On this week's episode, we unpack our thoughts on Deadpool 2, and then talk about one of our favorite topics, action movies, the good, the bad, and the guilty pleasures. Plus, Aaron finishes Cobra Kai, and I sort of apologize to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Let's start unpacking and open the garage for episode 2. And welcome to the next edition of the Fanboy Garage. I'm Chris Lasanti, joined, as always, by my co-host, the one and only Aaron Varola.
Hey, what's going on, folks? How y'all doing out there? Episode 2. Ho-ho!
Yeah, imagine that. And we'd like to, start off by saying that the Fanboy Garage is now part of the Revenge of the Fans network.
That's right. Very exciting. You know, lots of great conversations happening behind the scenes with Mario Francisco Robles, editor in chief of Revenge of the Fans, and it's a very proud day for us today.
It definitely all happened
pretty quick.
Yeah, and we'd like to thank everyone who supported the show for episode 1. People literally from around the world. So that's very humbling. And hopefully we're welcoming some new listeners for episode 2 through Revenge of the Fans. So welcome to all of you who are listening for the first time.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we would be remiss to not thank the folks that have already taken the time to leave reviews on the on Apple, iTunes, well, Apple Podcasts. And, I mean, we're sitting pretty at 5 stars right now. So, let's keep that perfect streak going. And, you know, if you guys enjoy what you're listening to, certainly stop by the podcast site on Apple and leave us a nice review.
So let's jump into it. Let's start unpacking some stuff. And we'll start out with Deadpool 2. We both have seen it.
Yep.
And, yeah. And it'll tie into our theme for the show, which is action. We'll get into a little bit more of that later on. But what did you think of Deadpool 2?
I thoroughly enjoyed it, man. I thought Deadpool 2 was a great follow up to a fantastic movie. You know, in the first one, you know, it's a lot more, I'd say, bombastic than the first one. But it's I think a lot of people have commented about if you really like the first movie, then you're certainly going to like the second. I really thought it was a good movie. I mean, it was a little hollow, but for a movie that kind of pokes fun at itself and really breaks that fourth wall like every 5 minutes or so, it's kind of hard to really critique it. But I enjoyed it. I thought it was good.
Yeah, I did too. I really enjoyed it. I definitely agree with everybody who's saying, you know, if you enjoyed the first one, you'll enjoy this one. And if you didn't really enjoy the first one, and I don't really know too many people that didn't enjoy the first one, but I'm sure they're out there, then you wouldn't enjoy this. It really is very much more of the same, but not in a bad way. I mean, it has a formula, and they're not really deviating from it. And why deviate? You know, it's successful, and it works. I laughed, I smiled, I just enjoyed myself for 2 hours. And it's nothing earth-shattering. It's not going to, you know, set the world on fire. But, I had a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there was some really fun moments throughout the movie. I mean, I know it's only been out for less than a week, so we won't spoil things here. But there are a lot of, like, tongue-in-cheek moments throughout the film that I'm sure folks will enjoy. Lots of cameos from actors and other characters and other groups and things like that. So it is certainly one of those movies that you'd have to keep a close eye on and could, you know, if you're really into kind of searching and seeking for Easter eggs a la Ready Player One, then I certainly recommend a repeat viewing. It certainly is a movie that I think, you know, Ryan Reynolds is certainly made for, the role of Ryan Reynolds, well, I'd say the role of Deadpool and the actor Ryan Reynolds were made for each other in this. So it's great to see him shine because I've seen a lot of his crap.
Yeah, he has. Yeah, he certainly has He has a lot of that.
Yeah. Actually, and I do think in some cases he is an underrated actor. When he really shines, he really shines. But it's unfortunate that he's made some interesting decisions in his career, which, needless to say, he definitely pokes a hell of a lot of fun.
Yes, he does.
Throughout Deadpool. So if you haven't seen it, be sure to check it out. You know, obviously, I would love to hear your comments on the movie. So please get at us on Twitter at the Fanboy Garage. So and we'll be sure to plug the show at the end, as well as our own personal Twitter accounts. So
yeah, two quick things just to that just made a big impact on me with Deadpool 2 was one is that I believe it is, in my opinion, the best, I guess, mid-credit sequence of any movie that I've seen. It's not a post-credit sequence, I guess. So it is a mid-credit. I just loved every minute of that. And in the theater that I saw it in, which is something I haven't experienced before, people literally didn't want to leave.
Yeah.
Like, when the final credits were over, like, people sat there for, like, 30 seconds, literally just, like, waiting to see if there was going to be more, which is kind of cool. And also, I will say the quote-unquote X-Force scene, one of my favorite things that I've seen in a movie in a long time. Just the ridiculousness of that and everything about it. If you've seen it, you know exactly what we're talking about. And if you haven't seen it, get out and see that. Just for that scene alone, that whole introduction of X-Force is just amazing. It's so Deadpool. It's pretty much everything this movie and this series has been about so far. So those were the two things that I think made the biggest impression on me.
Yeah, no, likewise. I think at that moment in particular, when we're meeting the X-Force characters in all of their glory, I was like crying with laughter. It was so good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely, you know, the mid-credits scene certainly sticks out to me. The one thing that was called out, I share this sentiment from and I've seen it a couple of times from a number of reviewers, is sort of the undercutting of some of the more emotional scenes. So like the first movie kind of caught me off guard a bit with how sensitive and sort of real it was in terms of the relationship between Vanessa and Deadpool. Her name is Vanessa, right?
Yeah, I think it's Vanessa.
So Vanessa and Deadpool. And I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. And I actually think it's one of the reasons that my wife gravitated to the movie. This time around, there's definitely some of that weight there, but it comes in very weird forms. So you'll have an emotional scene and then it feels like they just throw in a whole bunch of jokes and you're like, okay, yeah, maybe this is not meant to be as heartfelt as it is trying to come off to be, but it's Deadpool, so ultimately it works. And again, you can't really critique it because it already does it for you. Like the movie throughout the course of it is poking its own holes, and it's actually quite brilliant.
Yeah. I thought the same thing. And what I found myself, you know, thinking about it while I was watching the movie, and in a way I almost feel like, and maybe this is intentional, like Deadpool sometimes feels like in these movies that he's like in a different movie. There were moments where, like, I feel like everybody else was sort of taking the movie very seriously, and Deadpool, just because of the nature of the character, like, he's a wise ass and whatever, like, he, you know, he's breaking the, you know, the fourth wall, and like, he's, you know, kind of winking at the audience, but, like, nobody else is, really.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So that's why I think you had that sort of that back and forth between the scenes that really like resonated emotionally, and then like the jokes, because I feel like he's constantly joking, and whether it's done like as a way to kind of shield himself from really feeling anything or not, like he's constantly joking and everybody else isn't.
Yeah, they were definitely heavier, and it was, I mean, every line had some sort of quip. And you're like, oh my God, did they really just say that? So, I mean, again, totally enjoyable. The one thing I will say, in my opinion, is a vast improvement from the first film was the fighting scenes. I just felt like there were, one, a lot more of them. And two, they were really good. Like when the action was on, it was on. And I'm, I was all for it. And you really get to see who, and truth be told, the CG is getting so good that I don't know what's real and what isn't. So there are a couple of times where I'm like, can the human body really do that? Was that a stunt person? Was that a CGI model? I had no idea. But the action scenes again were just so well choreographed and executed, and also they all packed their own, bit of humor in them as well.
Yeah, and there was, I think anyway, and there's more action in this. The set pieces are bigger. I mean, there was action, obviously, and there was some really great action moments in the first movie. But this one, it just felt like, there was more of it and it was bigger and a little bit more memorable. And part of that could just be it's very fresh, obviously, having just seen it. But yeah, I agree. And, of course, David Leitch, who directed Deadpool 2,
That's right.
he cut his teeth as a stunt person and stunt coordinator before going on to fame as the co-director of John Wick with Chad Stahelski. And then he handed the reins of the John Wick franchise over to Chad Stahelski, who did two and is doing three, and he went on to direct Atomic Blonde. So he's got that action movie pedigree. And I don't know about you, but the first John Wick is one of my favorite action movies of all time. And this might sound like a little bit of hyperbole, but the first John Wick to me, the first time I saw it, I was like, oh my God, this is the closest that I can remember an American filmmaker or filmmakers from an American studio coming close to capturing the magic that John Woo was able to capture with his
Oh,
best
yeah.
Hong Kong action works, Hard Boiled and The Killer. The Killer being one of my favorite movies of all time, of any genre. It didn't quite have that poetic sort of John Woo, those two movies, The Killer especially, almost has like an operatic or like ballet-like quality to it,
Right.
mixed in with its over-the-top violence. And John Wick didn't quite have that. But just as a pure action, like, spectacle, and the theme, obviously, of the kind of the tragic themes of the hero in like John Wick, that did carry over. So that movie always reminded me very much of a really good John Woo film. In fact, I mean, John Woo himself, when he came over to America to make movies, never was able to top his own great works.
I mean, he threw out a couple of I'd say interesting action films. Face Off comes to mind.
Face Off was, yeah, well, and he started out, I mean, it started kind of downhill for him because when he was first coming over to America, of course, Hollywood and studios being what they are, they heard the name John Woo and they saw that he was a Hong Kong filmmaker and they assumed he was a martial art director, which he isn't. And so he got all these martial art scripts. And he kind of turned most of them down. And then he finally came across the script for Hard Target, which he liked. And he wanted to cast Kurt Russell in that role. And the studio was like, no, they wanted Jean-Claude Van Damme. So we got Jean-Claude Van Damme.
That's the mullet Van Damme.
Yes, it sure is. And so what you get is Hard Target, which is a movie that I actually like. But at the end of the day, coming off of The Killer, Hard Target is basically a competently made Jean-Claude Van Damme film with some inspired visuals because it is John Woo. But at the end of the day, it's like a competently made Jean-Claude Van Damme film. It's still the downside of Van Damme is still there, the kind of the cardboard acting and stuff like
Gotta
that. So
get
that's
the
how,
splits in.
yeah, gotta get the splits. So he, that's how John Woo started out, and then he had some hits and misses. I mean, he did Mission Impossible 2, which is my least favorite of that franchise.
That's right. Yeah, I don't that actually I've only seen that movie maybe twice, and I am not a fan of it at all. I actually thought once the second movie rolled out, I was like, okay, well that was a quick franchise.
Yes.
boy, was I wrong.
And it's as it's still going on today. But yeah, so that's where, I mean, as far as modern day action, though, John Wick, and I like John Wick too. Obviously, it didn't have the stakes that the first movie had, but I enjoyed it, and especially really loved the action in that movie. And I liked Atomic Blonde as well.
I haven't seen Atomic Blonde.
I liked Atomic Blonde a lot, actually. So I'm a fan of actually both of those directors' work so far. And I mean, so that got me thinking back, you know, to back in the day when I first started watching action movies. And I know you and I have a similar pedigree when it comes to this type of stuff. Mm-hmm. So, you know, where are you when it comes to action films? Like, what got you started and made you kind of fall in love with that genre?
It's my dad, man. My dad exposed me. Probably, you know, it's funny because you and I, actually, I forgot who I was talking to about this, but I was saying I grew up, you know, in the 80s, you grew up with these like uber violent movies that you kind of forget were uber violent. Like, so I grew up on Rambo.
Right.
And, you know, watching Rambo shoot a bow and arrow into a person, an explosive arrow at that, and turn them into silly putty and paste, and thinking that's the coolest, you know, the coolest thing in the world. But my dad certainly influenced me in terms of, you know, that genre. So I used to watch, you know, some of the early Jackie Chan films. And then when he came over, well, when he quote unquote came over to the US, but basically he rebranded like some of his kung fu movies into like action movies in the US, but movies like that. But like I said, you know, I grew up in the era of Stallone and Schwarzenegger and Steven Seagal and all of these other. I mean, Lethal Weapon is a great action movie in my opinion. You know, so Richard Donner,
Richard, and you know, Lethal Weapon. It's funny because that it's sort of like a forgotten action movie. Not that the franchise is forgotten about, but I think that so much emphasis has been put on, like, you know, Mel Gibson's character and the relationship between Danny Glover and Mel Gibson that people have almost forggotten. Like, those are action movies.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Totally. Yeah. I mean, from the moment it kind of starts, I mean, yes, it's sort of like a cop thriller / cop drama comedy, but yeah, I mean, the, you know, fight scene with Gary Busey at the end of that, and all of the action, you know, sort of chasing down cars barefoot.
Yeah.
What's his name? Mr. Joshua. That was Gary Busey's character's name, but, you know, chasing him down a freeway barefooted.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's the only way to really chase someone down on a freeway.
I mean, but I mean, Mel Gibson sells it because he definitely he's running barefoot through the streets of L.A.
He is a very believable kind of nutcase in that series of movies.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. But yeah, I mean, you know, being exposed to all of that stuff, RoboCop is another movie that stands out in my mind. Hell, like Jean-Claude Van Damme's Cyborg.
Wow. There's a deep cut right there.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like, creepy, like, weird movie. Probably one of the worst, if I can, remember, like, one of the worst movies I've probably ever seen, but, you know.
Speaking of worst, you know, there's an interesting trivia note on Cyborg, and we'll get into, this will be a topic for a different podcast, but do you know the background of Cyborg, that movie? They actually reused sets from the Masters of the Universe movie.
I remember hearing that.
In certain parts of the world, Cyborg was actually released as Masters of the Universe 2, The Cyborg.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, and either way, I mean, you know, it's like doubling down on a terrible movie. So they went from one terrible movie and made another terrible movie, which may or may not have, you know, supposedly been a sequel. But yeah, that was really the introduction to Jean-Claude Van Damme. I remember seeing that trailer, and it was like, wow, who's this Jean-Claude Van Damme guy? Because the name just sounded cool.
Right, right. My first, so there was that movie, but then there was another movie that I had on, like, VHS that I believe, like, I watched until the wheels broke on the cassette, was No Retreat, No Surrender.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Oh, man, dude, love that movie. Like, it's funny trying to watch it now, and I'm like, okay, let's just fast forward to the fight scenes.
Yeah, I have a, I mean, and we're going to talk a lot about guilty pleasures as this show goes on, but one of mine, now that you're we're talking about Van Damme, he made a movie called Nowhere to Run with Rosanna
so
Arquette, which is,
yes.
You know, it's as simple a plot in a movie as you can get. You know, they hire him, he's like a drifter, and he winds up getting hired to be like a farmhand, and it turns out he can like kick some serious butt. So that happens to come in handy because sure enough, like the local bad guys are harassing the family. It's a movie that I got as like a rental, like over the summer, like I was away like in Pennsylvania and there was like a video store there and it's all that they had. And I remember watching that and I loved that. So that always became sort of like a real guilty pleasure. Like most people, they talk about Van Damme, they talk about like Kickboxer and Bloodsport. You know, kind of the universal soldier,
yeah,
like the more obvious
the classic,
ones, but
the real good, like Van Damme movies.
But I always like movies like that, like Nowhere to Run, like a nice simple tale of, you know, give me some good guys and bad guys, and I don't need a necessarily complicated plot, cool martial arts action, and I'm good to go.
It's funny because Seagal did a very similar movie where he was like. But then he started, you know, like plugging his like little environmental bits in there. And
on Deadly Ground, yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So it's like this, almost the same thing where he's like discovered by, you know, a local tribe and they want to,
yeah.
He's got to defend the local people from the big bad oil company.
That was kind of where it started to go downhill with Seagal. It's funny you mention him because my, you know, as I kind of mentioned in episode one, my love affair with action movies also came from my father. It was something that we bonded over, and my father loved Seagal. That was like his guy. Those first four movies, Above the Law, Marked for Death, Hard to Kill, and Out for Justice, and then obviously Under Siege after that, like those were like staples. Like we would watch those over and over again. Didn't matter how many times we saw them. My father thought Seagal was just like the coolest guy. He wanted to be able to walk down a street like Seagal and then be able to like beat up some people if he needed to.
Those
movies were ingrained. And you know, it's funny with Seagal because Above the Law, he made two movies, Above the Law and Under Siege, which were actually directed by Andrew Davis, who went on to direct The Fugitive, which is one of my favorite movies of all time.
So good.
Above the Law and Under Siege are actually like of those guys like that were popular around that time, like those two movies are like significantly better in quality than a lot of the other, that type of stuff, and a lot of the stuff that followed. I mean, if you look at the difference between, like, Out for Justice and Above the Law, and especially Under Siege, I mean, there's a huge difference in quality.
Right.
Yeah, but Seagal was very big. I was a very big fan of his. But on Deadly Ground, I mean, that's when things started to go kind of downhill for him. And he really didn't do anything much that I thought anyway was worthwhile after that at that point.
Yeah, they almost became, like, On Deadly Ground became almost like the cookie cutter approach, because then there were a couple of other movies where he started doing these, like, I don't know, I don't want to call them social justice movies, but for lack of a better word, social justice movies, you know, where there was some sort of political thread,
right?
Like, you know, he's making some sort of social commentary on the world, and I'm just like, dude, just throw people around with your keto and like call it a day. I don't need like politics or, you know, you trying to make people aware of whatever it was. And then, you know, my dad too was also a big fan of Seagal. So, you know, I remember my dad saying, oh yeah, this guy is like beating up on women and all this other stuff. And I'm like, that's not cool. Like, you know, so I kind of fell out of love. Not only because he was like assaulting women, but just his movies became just boring and kind of more of the same. And then he started to go really mainstream, where I forgot the name of the movie, but he started getting involved with the hip hop community.
Right. Oh yeah, he did like Cradle to the Grave? Oh, Exit Wounds. Yeah.
Something like that.
Yep.
Yeah, so, and you've got, like, DMX and Ja Rule and all these other guys who clearly can't act. But they were all copying the Romeo Must Die?
Exactly, yeah.
You know, movie, which I thought was awesome.
I'm a big fan of Romeo Must Die, actually, as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. But the other interesting thing is, as we were talking about action movies, is that it was a lot of action TV that got me really into it, as well as I'm really thinking about it, because we had shows like Knight Rider and the
Yeah.
A-Team and Airwolf,
Airwolf,
Airwolf.
yep.
You know what I mean? So I felt like action. I mean, and then if you even talk about cartoons from like the Transformers and G.I. Joes and all of that, I mean, it felt like, the 80s was act so action centric. Everything was action oriented. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a really good point. I never really thought of it like that. And now that I think about it, yeah, I mean, it was the A-Team. I mean, Knight Rider, I was like addicted to Knight Rider.
Dude, I had a power wheel.
Oh man, I mean, I tell you, I wanted like every car I got into, like I wanted to, I just pretended like it was Knight Rider. And I mean, yeah, and there's actually another show that is a, I actually just got it on Blu-ray because they, of all things, they released it. It's clearly a guilty pleasure of mine. It's called The Master. It was on for about a minute and a half. Lee Van Cleef played a very unconvincing ninja. I know you're a big fan of the ninjas.
Oh,
He
yes, I am.
played a very unconvincing ninja in this show called The Master. With Timothy Van Patten, one of the Van Patten family, was his like sidekick, his like American sidekick, and it wasn't on. It was on for like one season. I don't even know if it actually got to finish the first season, but they just released it on Blu-ray, which is amazing. So I bought it because I, as a kid, I loved that show, and not realizing how truly terrible it was, and now I can watch it as an adult and appreciate it for like just how bad it really was. And it just has that real nostalgia element for me. But yeah, there was a lot of really good action television in the 80s.
Yeah, and everything was like
Ninjas.
ninjas. Like,
Ninjas are
seriously,
the
and then
key.
we brought it up, it was like
Yeah.
ninjas everywhere, like American Ninja, and like I think, wait, was Shogun Assassin is an 80s movie, I believe. I have to check that, but I'm almost positive Shogun Assassin.
And there were movies like Enter the Ninja and Return of the
Oh,
Ninja,
yeah.
and which led to, and there's Ninja 3, The Domination, which is actually kind of a really cool movie that's generated a very big cult following in recent years. So yeah, the ninjas were a very big thing too in the 80s. And I think I recommended to you on Twitter a while back that Scott Adkins, who's sort of one of the top current like martial arts guys right now in the movies, he made two movies, Ninja and Ninja 2, that are those are actually really good, and they're modern kind of ninja movies.
Yeah, on my queue, man. Haven't checked them out just yet, but
Yeah.
definitely in my queue to watch, but yeah, it's kind of funny, like the whole, I think, and the martial arts, craze definitely was a tightly woven into action films, so you had that genre was like action martial arts movies, and then you kind of had your, sort of military styled action films, which is like where the Rambos and the
Right.
Commandos of the world sort of lived, and then you had that weird sci-fi action, which is like Alien and, oh, Aliens, I should say,
Yeah.
and Predator.
Right.
Those movies, and it's kind of funny, because I do consider those to be action films in a way. Like, let's look at the filmography of Schwarzenegger, right? So, you have movies like The Predator, but then you've got The Running Man,
Exactly.
which is
And Total
a
Recall.
Total Recall, absolutely.
Yep.
What other movies you did? I Commando, I mentioned before, but yeah, I mean, these were like the top quality action films. And
Yeah.
then there's the other guy from the Planet Hollywood circle, which is Bruce Willis, and I cannot do this podcast without mentioning Die Hard.
Well, yeah. I mean, Die Hard
Holy cow.
transcends the genre. I mean, Die Hard's that movie that is like, it's kind of bigger than the action genre, because Die Hard is really, for what it is, it's kind of a perfect film. There are a lot of movies like that, and you'll hear that term from me a few times as we go on, in this run here of shows. But yeah, Die Hard is it's that movie that it's an action movie. It's a complete balls to the wall action movie, but it's just a great film. And really, the key to Die Hard, besides Bruce Willis, who just is super charismatic in that role, he was really kind of born to play that role. What Die Hard has that, to me, is the most one of the most important things you need to have in a great action movie is an amazing villain. And that's something that, like, you give me a good villain, whether it's a great performance or not, as long as it's somebody that I truly, like, want to punch in the face,
I'm gonna
really enjoy your movie. Now, here's a guilty pleasure that is not anywhere near the quality of Die Hard, but it's an example. I'm going to use it as an example of how I think a good villain can sort of elevate, and a charismatic star can elevate, a movie that isn't really that good on the surface, and that's Walking Tall with The Rock.
Oh, yeah.
Now,
yeah, man.
I get it, before everybody jumps on me, it's not a great film. I understand that. But Neil McDonough, who people will now know as Damien Dark. Yep, in the Arrowverse. He always plays a really good bad guy. Like, he's very rarely ever likable in anything that he does, but he's really good at it. He's the kind of the villain in that movie, and he's really good at it. And The Rock, obviously, is super charismatic and a guy you want to root for. So that's always a movie that I felt like is actually, I enjoy much more than probably the quality warrants.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but you take
that, that is a fantastic movie. I do like it. It is also a guilty pleasure of mine. I do have it.
Yeah,
I own it. Yeah.
You take a good villain though and put him in a movie like Die Hard though, which has so much going for it, and that's when now you're talking about, you get it into the classic category.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And then in terms of guilty pleasures of mine, so Cobra, the Sylvester Stallone movie, which. As I try to, like, think about it, I think the coolest thing was that he had, like, cobras on his... I mean, cobras were, like, the huge... There was, you know, there was karate, there was martial arts,
yep,
and that whole thing. And then there's, like, cobras. You know, people's fascinations with cobras, yeah, and dragons and, you know, tigers and stuff like that. But, you know, Sylvester Stallone's Cobra with his, you know, reflective aviator glasses and his, you know, Cobra, you know, branded pistols and whatnot, and the matchstick or toothpick or whatever was in his mouth. I mean, I thought he was, like, the coolest dude ever. And, like, the villains in that movie were creepy. I don't know if I'm, like, vaguely remembering. It's been a while since I've seen it. It's also in my queue to watch, to rewatch. But they were, like, what, some, like, was it, like, a mother and son, like...
Yeah, I'd be honest with you.
Inbred crew. I'm like,
yeah,
totally blanking.
It's been a long time since I've seen Cobra, but you know, the not only you talk about how, like, there was a fascination with, like, cobras and snakes and tigers and stuff, but also the amazing thing about Cobra is his last name was Cobretti.
Oh,
in that movie, which is where the Cobra thing actually kind of comes from. It's like one of those, like, really on the nose '80s. Action things that you just don't get anymore.
So funny, man.
Yeah,
it's so funny. But it's interesting because if we you know, in the current landscape that we are in, you know, in terms of entertainment, I mean, it was the closest thing we could have gotten to a real deal Punisher.
Yeah.
And you and I have both talked, but Dolph Lundgren's, you know, Punisher is very much a guilty pleasure of ours. But it's funny because you think about it, if Sylvester Stallone had played the Punisher, as, you know, like he did with Cobra, I then would have thought, hey, that'd have been a great, you know, a great attempt at,
yeah,
at kind of like capturing, you know, the essence of that character.
Would have been much better than making him Judge Dredd, which was a complete failure.
God.
Yeah.
That is, yeah.
That was
Judge Dredd. You know, it's funny because the mid '90s or early '90s when Dredd came out, there was just a lot of the colorful sort of action movies. So
yes.
Sylvester Stallone did a couple of these. You know, you had like Demolition Man. You know, you mentioned Judge Dredd, Last Action Hero.
Yes. Which I'm not quite sure if that even... Yeah, Last Action Hero is... You know, when I first saw Last Action Hero in the theaters, I was like, you know what? This movie isn't as bad as, like, the critics and everybody said it was. And I recently rewatched it, maybe about a year ago. And I was like, you know what? This movie isn't really that good. It's fun. Like, the plot of it is fun, and the beginning is fun, but it hits like a midpoint where I actually was struggling to get through it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the concept of it is interesting.
It's a great concept. Yeah.
Yeah. But it does, it, you know, you start getting a bit of the sort of cliche Schwarzenegger, you know, with the hokey pokey lines and all of that stuff. And, but I will say, and I don't remember if this movie came either slightly before or after Last Action Hero. I want to say before, but I could be totally wrong. And that is True Lies.
True Lies is a great movie. Yeah.
Amazing, amazing movie. And honestly, it is literally like the Midas touch of James Cameron, you know, and his ability to kind of pull these movies off. And we would be remiss to not also mention Terminator. Terminator 2 specifically, sure. Another great action movie. I mean, these are action movies.
They
right?
are. I mean, yeah, I mean, you forget about, like, sometimes we'll forget to, because when I think, like, action movie, I'm thinking, like, more of, like, the stuff we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, like the everyman faced with a challenge.
Yeah, and... or movies that really are, like, that their sole appeal is they're an action movie. You know, kind of like how, like, people will watch, like, a Friday the 13th movie just because it's a slasher film, and it really doesn't have anything else going for it. So you're watching it really mainly just for that slasher element. So like when I'm thinking action movies, like sometimes I get caught in that trap of thinking like a movie that really is just there to provide me some cool fight scenes or some big explosions. But movies like Aliens, which you mentioned before, the Terminator movies, at least the first couple, you know, sometimes you forget to include those because they are kind of more than just action films, but it really at the end of the day that's what they are.
It's funny because, you know, you think, going back to Rambo's references, I mean, the first, you know, the first Rambo, First Blood, is not really an action movie.
No,
not at all. It, you know, it's a for those, and it's interesting because I don't know who really, you know, we're in episode two, so I don't really know who our listeners are, so to speak. So if you want to engage on us again on Twitter, please do so. But, you know, if you've ever really sat back and watched First Blood, it is a man who is coming back from, you know, the Vietnam War with severe PTSD, who feels like his country abandoned him and is having flashbacks and is subsequently, you know, sort of vilified by the law when he's just trying to get home. And so there's a huge breakdown of communication, and it is a heartbreaking story of, you know, what I'm pretty sure many, you know, real soldiers were coming home to. And it's an amazing, amazing film when you kind of take out the sort of action, you know, the action brand or right. genre, you know, from it. It feels very much like Deer Hunter to me. Hmm. It's just a phenomenal movie.
Yes.
Say, certainly on the lower tier of that comparison, but it's a great film. And then you get to Rambo 2, Rambo 3, and they just kind of became ante.
Yeah, I mean, you know, look at it. I'm actually going to draw a parallel in a way between the Rambo and Rocky franchises in that, you know, before I do that, though, you know, First Blood 2, there's gray area. In First Blood, like John Rambo is not like the hero in First Blood. In fact, he's quite the opposite. Now, you maybe think there is some gray area there. You're not sure. Is he the hero? Is he the bad guy? What is he? But there definitely is not a clear line where it's like he's the good guy who's out to get the bad guys.
Right.
But now my parallel between the Rambo and Rocky series is, you know, obviously the first Rocky is, you know, an all time classic movie. And, you know, then the second one is still a, you know, a great movie, but by 3 and then especially by 4, like, they started to become more cartoony, more like just kind of stereotype, like they got bigger, you know, they were much more like over the top, no pun intended, and kind of the Rambo franchise sort of fell into that too for a little while. Like Rambo 2 was obviously a bigger, clearly he was the hero, you know, very patriotic. Rambo right. 3, take that to like the 10 millionth level. And then they brought it back home with, well, I guess what they call it, just Rambo. which was actually a really good movie, where they kind of brought it a little bit more back to the roots. But
You know, it's funny because that Rambo movie felt like a mix between the first and second film, you know. But yeah, no, I totally agree and see the sort of relevance between, you know, the Rocky films. It's kind of funny how they, you know, these actors got so juiced up, literally.
Yes.
I mean, they almost became like real life action figures, He-Man action figures. You know, they had that nice gloss going to them.
They sure did. Stallone had excellent gloss.
Yeah, you know, just for that to show all of that body body definition and 0% body fat.
And there was no reason for it to have that gloss in many cases, which makes it even better.
It was hilarious. Like, you, dude, you're always sweating. Like, I think you might have a thyroid problem.
Exactly.
But, you know, you know, but these movies freaking defined, you know, the 80s and the early 90s without a doubt. And I think, you know, Stallone and a couple of others are definitely responsible for that push. And I know that they were making a very good attempt at sort of bringing that back. When you look at the Expendables, and you know, that felt very much like one of those like classic, you know, testosterone filled action flick. They're jumping from airplanes and like skipping across the water and blowing people's heads off, and like,
Friends and I made an event out of the first Expendables movie. Like, we got people together to go see that like we hadn't seen in a while, like just to go there and just enjoy the what we hoped, and it turned out to deliver, just a complete over-the-top absurdity of what that movie was going to be. You know, we all grew up watching almost everybody in that, and we all happened to be big Jason Statham fans, you know, as far as the more modern action films go. So that was just like the perfect storm for us. So yeah, that first Expendables movie was huge for us.
Right. You know, it's all sort of, you know, it's definitely evolved over time, and I also think that you know, they're sort of revisiting, you know, it depends, of course it depends on the director, but the amount of violence that we've seen recently, specifically like kind of linking all of this back to Deadpool, it is reminiscent of those sort of 80s films, you know what I mean, where you know, film hyper realized violence, you know, where blood is squirting all over the place and you're chopping off people's arms and heads and stuff like that, because there was a point where it wasn't necessarily like that. You know what I mean? If you look at, you know, the Fast and Furious franchise,
right?
What it's become. I'm not talking about like the first movie. You know, these super heist films, and they are sort of action oriented, of course, but the death scenes or even the fight scenes, you know, people are getting hit with like massive bricks or flipping their cars over and they're walking out totally fine. Except for Gal Gadot, who fell off of her car.
She did.
Died. She on the longest runway ever.
Yes, but she recovered well.
Yeah, she did.
But yeah, you're right. I mean, and I think like John Wick and Deadpool and movies like that are really starting to kind of inspire this new, you know, generation of people who grew up kind of watching the same movies that we grew up watching, and kind of have a lot of the same influences and same like kind of idols when it comes to action. And yeah, so I definitely see that, and I'm certainly not going to complain about it.
Yeah, not at all. I mean, you know, to your point about John Wick and, you know, the style, it is definitely a super violent film to a degree. I mean, there isn't. I mean, I could totally be like minimizing the violence in this, but I'm like, I don't remember people's heads like popping off when he shoots them. I just remember them kind of like. Maybe I do. I don't know. But I love it. I do love the first John Wick movie. And the second one, I thought did a great job. But then you look at this this other movie that kind of feels John Wick-esque, this Hotel Artemis.
I've seen the trailers for that. Yeah, it's got
Yeah.
my attention, put it that way.
Yeah, it looks interesting, but again, it almost feels like it's like, oh, it's that place where all of the assassins sort of hang out in John
Yeah.
Wick, which kind of feels a bit like of a ripoff to me, so I'm sort of on the fence about it. But then there's that other, and I think, I don't remember if it was you or Davo that sent it, but the one with the guy who becomes paralyzed, I'm totally blanking on the name of it, and the AI gets embedded into
Oh,
his
yes.
it that move. I don't even
I
know the
don't
name of
remember
that
that.
movie.
I just remember we all kind of saw that trailer at the same time on Twitter, and we're all kind of freaking out over it.
Yeah.
And I don't remember what that was either now.
But that seems like a super, violent action, another action film.
Yeah.
Of course, obviously, these things are, like I mentioned, they've got their sci-fi elements, they've got their sort of drama elements. But again, these are like the new breed of action films, and they're looking kind of good. But I also wonder, it makes me think that the comic book genre has kind of gobbled up, what people would expect to be a hardcore action film. I mean, John Wick is the exception, but what other like super successful action film has there been outside of this new, comic book genre?
Yeah, and I don't know that action, unless like we said earlier, it transcends into something else. I don't know that action has ever really been a genre that is, made for like huge box office. We talked about Stallone earlier, right? So Stallone's had this long storied career. He's had many blockbusters, but he also had a period there in the 80s where he made a series of movies that, to be honest with you, if they had starred a lesser known name actor, they probably would have gone direct to video, or maybe just been like late night Cinemax fare movies, like Over the Top, or another movie that's kind of a personal favorite of mine that doesn't get talked about a lot, Lock Up, which is a movie that Stallone made where Donald Sutherland plays a really good villain in that movie. But like at the end of the day, Lock Up is a movie that it probably would go direct to video if it had starred like somebody that wasn't Stallone or like Schwarzenegger or somebody like that. So, action movies, they're a genre that has a fan base, and if they don't get too creative with it, I think they still feel like they can make some money if they can keep the budgets low. But there will be times where something becomes bigger than this little subgenre, and yeah, I mean, I agree. But I don't know that their action movies are necessarily geared towards huge box office. I think the spectacle movie now, like your comic book movies and your big sci-fi adventures like Star Wars and things like that, that's where we're you're really looking, or franchises, things that are popular brands.
Yeah, and that's kind of sad. I mean, you think about it, John Wick could have been a one and done film.
It probably was supposed to be.
Yeah, but I mean, everyone's out chasing the green, and they're really milking the crap out of the film, and now it's becoming a franchise. I mean, I would say, maybe Taken
Yeah, Taken
was
actually
another.
did. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean that, but again, milk the crap out of it. Now
Yes.
let's crank out two more of these things, three more of these things.
And they got pretty bad.
Yeah, and it's
And
like,
then,
how many of your family members are gonna
exactly. And then
are being
Liam Neeson went
affected?
on to basically make, Taken on a train or Taken on a bus or
An airplane.
Taken, on an airplane. I mean, he basically fell into this mode where he was kind of just remaking those types of movies over and over again. That's going to happen. I mean, you look at a movie like the popular kind of cutting edge action movies of today, like The Raid, another all time favorite of mine. Or even The Raid 2. Like, these are movies that get a lot of hype. A lot of people talk about them. A lot of people will put them high on their lists as far as great action movies, but they're movies that really didn't make a ton of money. I mean, they made good money relative to their budget and relative to the studio, and the fact that, the original Raid wasn't even a Hollywood studio film. But, they're not some a lot of these movies that we talk about were movies that were not like huge box office performers, but they've had a longevity because they do well, like, for home viewing. You know, like, action movies, a lot like horror movies, always did well, like, in the 80s and 90s on, like, you know, video rentals. Mm-hmm. They're, like, you know, a perfect movie for that. It's not something that you're necessarily going to run out to the movie theater to see, but it's something you're definitely going to want to watch and enjoy. So they were perfect for cable television. You know, I think they're perfect for today's times with streaming services and, you know, with so many movies coming out. So maybe that's another reason why we're seeing kind of this brief resurgence.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny, while you were talking, I was like, let me look up, you know, some of the top, I think Rotten Tomatoes did an editorial around top 100 action films, and there's so many films that we've already named.
Oh, really?
Here. Oh, dude, I mean, we hit quite a few of them. You know, let's see. We talked about the Fast and the Furious franchise. Under Siege is under there. You know, let's see, Commando, another, you know, another film that I absolutely love. Oh my God. So I love this movie so much. It's The Long Kiss Goodnight with Gina Davis and, Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah.
Yeah. You want to talk about an awesome sort of spy action movie, but not really a spy movie, but, it is so good to watch. I mean, that is a Gina Davis, in my opinion, at her best, where she's kind of like, you know, Susie Homemaker, you know, baking cookies, and then in the next breath, she's snapping people's necks and torturing them and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's hard to top that.
Yeah, it's a badass movie. But yeah, no, I mean, you know, we've gone through many of these.
So,
but
very important, though, because you mentioned it earlier and we kind of teased it on Twitter. Where is the Dolph Lundgren Punisher on that list of 100 greatest action movies on Rotten Tomatoes? Is it on there? I'm pretty sure it isn't, but
I'm going through it, but I'm not seeing it.
So it's, you know, it's actually funny because I've used the term Dolph Lundgren Punisher bad when referencing movies that are really bad. But in all this time, I mean, I have to admit, I'm a fan, like you said earlier, I'm a fan of the Dolph Lundgren Punisher. I own it. I think that is a movie that, had it been named anything else, people would look at very differently.
Yeah.
It is not a masterpiece by any stretch of the imagination. I'm not saying it's Die Hard, okay? But that is a pretty good action movie with a good performance by Louis Gossett Jr., who somehow found his way. That was, I guess, that period of time where he was making things like Jaws 3 and not as selective, let's put it that way. But that movie is not a bad action movie. You know, it's a bad Punisher movie, but it's not a bad action movie. So I think everybody should give the Dolph Lundgren Punisher a shot. Just don't expect, well, especially now since we got the really good version of the Punisher on Netflix, but don't just look at it as something else. Pretend like it was called anything but the Punisher, the Renegade or something like that, and watch it from that perspective.
Don't say Renegade, because that was what was his name? Lorenzo Lamas.
Oh no, I can't believe I just did that to myself.
I can't even believe I just brought that up. The interesting thing, though, is that if you really think about it, the more modern Punisher movies, right? The one with Thomas Jane and what's the other guy's name?
Ray Stevenson.
Those were okay. You know what I mean? Like, so I wouldn't necessarily say that we've had, like, oh my God, an amazing Punisher movie. I will say, though, the John Bernthal series is by far one of my favorite Marvel Netflix shows.
Yeah, I agree.
If we really want to talk about like today's action, well, we're seeing it on Netflix. I mean, if we really want to, like, split hairs, I mean, that Daredevil show is an amazing action show. Like, obviously there's going to be some drama and all that built into it. And again, it's coming through the lens of that sort of comic book franchise, but as a TV show, a well done action show. The stairwell fight in season two, the hallway fight scene in season one. I mean, those are amazing choreographed
They're
fight
great fight
scenes.
scenes, yeah.
And then you layer in the stuff with the Punisher and his, you know, his series, and it's just, I mean, it's really, really good stuff.
Yeah, and I think a lot of those that fight choreography in Daredevil was inspired by The Raid,
Yeah.
which from a martial arts film standpoint kind of changed the game, and the influence from that movie is still being felt in a lot of stuff today. But yeah, I mean, those are great. Now, Iron Fist, not so much. That was the opposite of good
Oof.
fight choreography, and
God,
believable
so
fight
bad.
scenes. So they haven't hit on everything on Netflix. But if you just want to watch the first couple of Daredevils and The Punisher from an action standpoint, because Jessica Jones, isn't really an action show at all. It's a
No,
great show, but it's not an action show.
I was just I know we've kind of quickly switched gears into some interesting stuff, but I'm about two episodes away from finishing the season, or season two, I shouldn't say this season because it's been a long time, and I really enjoyed it. I know some folks had commented that it wasn't as good and it kind of like fell flat, but I've got to be honest, I mean, it's not as good as season one because David
Tenet, yeah.
Tennant
Yep.
is amazing, and he
Yes.
does actually make an appearance in season two, and when he does, holy cow, does he
It
bring some weight.
yeah, he lights it on fire when you get
He
that, yeah.
really does. But it's a good show. I dig
It
it. I
really is,
just
and that, but it does tie into my villain theory before, because sometimes without that, and
yeah.
you know, even Daredevil season two without Wilson Fisk, once the Punisher is gone, it's not quite the same show. Second
Yeah.
half of that season, because you got to have the great villain. I know we talk a lot about how you know, some of the problem with these superhero movies and stuff lately are the lack of like really great villains, but that goes for pretty much any genre. If it's going to be about good guys and bad guys, or you know, heroes of it, you got to have the great villain, or else things just don't quite work the same way.
Yeah, no, agreed. Agreed. I just got to the number. Well, first of all, no, The Punisher was not on that list. I went through it
I'm
thoroughly, but the number
shocking.
one,
Shocking.
actually, number six was The Killer.
Oh, amazing, amazing movie.
Yeah,
And they're
but number
remaking
one.
The Killer, by the way, which I'm a little skeptical about, but I'm gonna give it a shot because that is a just an amazing film, just on
Yeah.
so many levels, the original.
It's a shame when they do that kind of stuff when they've kind of they tap something that many people hold to be sacred, you know, just to remake it and sort of wash it up a bit. It never seems to be better
Right.
than the original. I mean, two examples come to mind is the Total Recall remake. Which I started to watch. I probably got maybe 30 minutes in, and I'm like, I cannot watch this. And RoboCop.
Oh yeah, the RoboCop. I tried to watch that and I just couldn't, it just wasn't doing anything for me. I liked elements of that movie. But I just overall, again, it's like the first RoboCop is perfect. So what are you going to really improve on? And they obviously they didn't. Now RoboCop 2, that's a different conversation. One day we'll do a podcast on worst sequels ever made, and I'll go into a very long discussion on RoboCop 2, which I one of my least favorite movies of all time.
Oh, dude, I actually think we're going to be at odds on that one because I don't mind RoboCop 2 at all.
Really?
Oh yeah, no, I don't mind it because I did have the misfortune of watching RoboCop 3.
Okay,
So
well, listen, I mean, yeah. If we're going to compare to, I mean, RoboCop 3, although RoboCop 3 I think is more kind of benign than anything else. It's just sort of there. I actually found RoboCop 2 somewhat offensive. But we'll have that. Obviously, we'll have to be a podcast for of its own, and we'll definitely get into that. I just want to see, because since you started to talk a little bit about television, I know you finished Cobra Kai finally.
Yes, I did.
So I want to give you a chance to talk about your thoughts now that you've seen the whole thing, just to finish up our discussion from last episode on Cobra Kai.
Yeah, so I was pleasantly surprised by how Cobra Kai wrapped up. I did think there were a couple moments where I'm like, okay, this better not rehash what I've already seen. And it didn't, thankfully. But then, I kind of figured it out. I was like, oh, okay, this is how this is going to tie up. But what did catch me su by surprise, and I don't know if we should. We'll throw up spoilers, sort of mark here. So if you don't want to hear it, and you're really interested in watching Cobra Kai, I suggest maybe you stop listening and catch us in later when you've watched it. But I'm giving you 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The reveal of Johnny's old sensei, which whose name is
Crease, yep.
Crease at the end. Okay, so throughout the whole show, I'm thinking to myself, man, Daniel LaRusso and Johnny have not aged at all. And then Crease shows up, and I'm like, dude, what did they put this guy in a cryo chamber? Like,
Seriously. I actually
oh.
didn't even realize it was going to be the same actor. And then I was like, oh my God, I think it's actually literally the same. Like they just transposed him.
Yeah. And I have to look it up. I don't know if that was an like, 'cause it looked really good. And it's obviously the, I mean, I think it's obviously the same
Yeah, no, it
actor.
is. From what I read, that was, yeah, I mean, that was just him now, basically.
Holy smokes.
Yeah.
I was blown away by that. But what I loved, about the show was how it ended and the sort of dynamic between Johnny, his son Daniel, and Johnny's student
Yep.
Miguel. That was so well done. The show, I mean, first of all, the show is amazing. Every episode it has some really nice, some really good treats and some awesome dialogue. It's well written, it's well shot, it's phenomenal. But it really digs in on those sort of last 3 or 4 episodes. I'd say the last 4 episodes were like the best. Because you start to see that what Johnny was trying to do was to, sort of bring back Cobra Kai in a
Yeah.
different way. And ultimately he failed. Like while he wins, he fails
Exactly.
again.
Yep.
And that to me was like, holy
Yeah, it
cow.
twisted and turned in a lot of different, just when you kind of thought you had everything figured out and it was just going to be this simple thing, like it really moved. I mean, I was really impressed, and now you'll know obviously what I meant in the last episode when I said that it ended on a very confident note. Because it clearly they had an idea that this thing was going to a second. You can't end the show like that and not know you're gonna, carry that story on. Because there's just too much left over there. There's too much story to be told.
Oh man, it was so good. So I am anxiously awaiting season 2 whenever that drops.
Yeah.
Because holy cow, it's yeah.
Yeah, and we were talking about it the other night, and we both had the same thought that, season 2 cannot come fast enough. It's got to happen like tomorrow, but
Yeah.
we'll wait patiently.
Very good.
I have to do one thing before we go, as far as television goes, and I have to kind of sort of apologize to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. We were pretty negative about the fact that the show's still going in the last episode, and I watched the season finale. The other day, which clearly was meant to be a series finale, even down to the title, which was called The End, which was a bookend to the it went along with the title of the last episode of the first season, which was the beginning of the end. So it clearly was meant to be a series finale. They probably had no idea they were going to get renewed, so it really worked. I actually really enjoyed the episode. I thought it works well as a series finale, and I would have been perfectly fine if that was the end. So I think it gives me an opportunity now to kind of say I'm maybe done now with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I don't necessarily have to continue watching because I got a finale that I was pretty satisfied with. and I thought they did a really good job. Clearly, since the show is the next season isn't going to come back until the summer of next year after Avengers 4, they're probably going to go down the same road that the MCU is going to go down with, like, time travel kind of resetting things. But it doesn't matter to me. I thought they did a good job, so I kind of will give them a half-hearted apology for the negativity from last week, because I enjoyed the series finale, or the season finale.
You don't get a pass from me, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I've invested way too much time for what I thought was a very disappointing finale. Now, I will say that their ability to kind of wrap up this whole timeline thing and, like, you know, it's time is fluid and it's never set in stone, like, fine, great. You know, that was, like, my nagging question. But the fact that nobody turned to dust at the end of this series.
I know you wanted dust. You were hoping.
I wanted dust. Yeah. I wanted ash in your face. I wanted people, like, pulling it off their tongues and going, what the heck just happened? The whole world collapsed. I wanted that kind of finale, and I didn't get it. I got a, like, this is the end of the road. Okay, guys, like, we're off with. And if I'm being honest, like, the closure of it didn't feel like closure to me. If they thought that this was really going to be the end, then they should have killed off, like, a couple of people.
They did kill off at least one main character.
Kind of one character, and yeah. I was like, meh. I was actually really pissed off at the end of the show.
All right. So basically, it's RoboCop 2 then. So. Yeah, that's what it all comes down to, yeah. Basically, at the end of the day.
No, it's my Justice League all over again.
All right, I guess we can bring this to an end. I will say to those listening, if there are any specific movies or time periods or actors that you've heard us mention during the course of the show that you'd like us to kind of really focus on, maybe for a future episode, please let us know. You can tweet us at the Fanboy Garage. We definitely would love to hear your ideas and your feedback on that. And because I just realized, especially, we've spoken for almost an hour about action movies and did not mention Chuck Norris once. And I'm pretty sure there's going to be some form of punishment for that somehow. So I'm going to sleep with one eye open tonight.
We already got that punishment, and it was called Sidekicks.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Point taken. All right.
No, honestly, we have talked, as you can tell, we are super, super passionate about all things related to entertainment and movies and, spending time with you guys all sort of reminiscing on, you know, what our sort of movie influences are and, you know, the things that get us super jazzed and excited. To Chris's point, if there's ever something you guys really want us to hone in on, definitely tweet at us for sure. If there's stuff that you guys don't like, definitely tweet at us. We're big boys. We can take feedback. I'm pleasantly surprised that we actually did a whole hour on just action movies, and I think we just scratched the surface.
We definitely just scratched the surface. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, all right.
So let's do some plugs. Chris, where can they find you?
They could find me at RealCLMighty on Twitter.
Awesome. And you guys can find me at Starting Sith on Twitter. I don't really do anything else social media-wise. We'll see how big this thing gets. Maybe we'll do a Facebook page or something like that. I don't know just yet. But, I do want to extend some additional thanks again to Mario for bringing us on to Revenge of the Fans. We are very, very, very excited to hopefully put, you know, our podcast in front of more people. And also, like all good Avenger movies, for potential crossovers. So who knows, we might see a couple of folks from the Revengers pod on this show and vice versa. So more to come. But thanks for tuning in.
Yeah, and of course, you can follow Revenge of the Fans at Revenge OT Fans on Twitter. And of course, just go to revengeofthefans.com for all the latest news, scoops, reviews, and of course, podcasts on the Revenge of the Fans network, including El Fanboy and the Revengers podcast. And this has been episode 2. We will see you next week.
Hasta la vista, baby.